expecting heavy downpours all day today.
You're a builder. You build. It's literally in your job title.
Woo! Let's hit it.
A little rain isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in. Hour number three of the program here on Thursday morning, a week away from Halloween, and what, 12 days away from the election? So things are getting spooky on both sides, I guess. We were talking in the last hour with a caller about Friday the 13th, the series. And for those who are unfamiliar, it was in first run syndication, which became hugely popular in the 80s. First run syndication were these shows that weren't on a network, but yet they had a pretty big presence on television. So we're talking shows like, you know, there were sitcoms like Out of This World about the girl who was half alien that could freeze time, and Burt Reynolds was the voice of her father. First run syndication. What were some of the other big shows of that era? Small Wonder, first run syndication, the little girl that was a robot. There was a number of dramas, and also like, you know, Xena and Hercules, those came later in the 90s, but those were first run syndication. So they're not on a network, but the, you know, like Channel 56, Channel 38, they would be the ones to carry them. And they, one of the things they did in first run syndication is they would grab sitcoms that didn't survive on network TV, like Too Close for Comfort, and they would put that out as a syndicated version, or It's a Living. There was a number of them that they had done that with, where they might have had one or two seats. Punky Brewster. They created new episodes in first-run syndication after it was canceled by NBC. So this was not an uncommon practice, but they would also create shows just for first-run syndication, and they would do reboots. They did What's Happening Now, a reboot of What's Happening. They did The Munsters Today, which was where it was the Munsters living in the late 80s. And one of them, you know, one of the genres they had was horror. They had shows like Tales from the Dark Side. They had shows like Freddy's Nightmares. And they had this show called Friday the 13th, the series, which didn't have any connection to Jason Voorhees and the Friday the 13th movies. Although William in New Bedford says the last object they were supposed to find in Friday the 13th, the series, was supposed to be the hockey mask, but they were canceled before it could happen. And so it still didn't really connect. Like, just that would be more of like a little wink and a nod. You know, that was more like at the end of Jason Goes to Hell, seeing Freddy's hand come up from the grave. You wouldn't call that a Freddy movie, but it was just like a little wink and a nod. And then, of course, they did eventually have the Freddy versus Jason movie. But that was a very fun series to watch. And what was interesting about Friday the 13th, the series, is most of these shows were on late at night. You know, Freddy's Nightmares was on late at night, like on a Friday. But Friday the 13th, the series, got a run on 38 at like 7 o'clock at night on a Saturday. So you could watch that without having to stay up late to watch it. And we watched it as kids. And a lot of the, you know, the episodes were freaky, but they weren't terrifying. They were just kind of mildly unnerving. But I was also a horror kid, so I might have had a different, you know, tolerance level for it than other people did. other people in my family are not horror fans. My sister Carrie hates horror movies. But generally, we're all of us kind of have an approach of, oh, yeah, yeah, it's a horror movie. El Jefe says, two of the most scary movie moments for me was the final scene of the Blair Witch Project when the guy was just hanging in the corner, and then the part of the Amityville Horror where the priest was upstairs getting attacked by flies and the door opens and you hear, get out, with a voice that sends chills up my spine till this day. And the iconic scenes probably stand out to people more than overall movies, because I find that every horror movie turns out to be a disappointment for me. You know, they start off strong. They have a good story. They have characters that get me interested, and they always fail to deliver on the end. The end is too rushed, or it's not believable, or whatever it may be. But so many movies have standout moments. Like, even if you didn't like the movie Hereditary, you remember that scene. And I'm not going to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, even though the movie's a couple years old at this point. But, you know, you remember that scene. If you are someone who, you know, doesn't like the movie The Exorcist, you still remember her head spinning around and her vomiting pea soup. You know, you still remember, even if you don't like The Omen, you still remember the guy getting his head cut off by the plate glass. Which, by the way, later happened in real life. The Omen curse. But the moments, you might not like Poltergeist, but you remember the clown wrapping his hands around Robbie's throat, or you remember the swimming pool scene, or you remember, you know, Carol Ann in the TV saying, "Mommy, I can't see you." In fact, it's a toss up. If you put me in front of a fan, like a pedestal fan, it's a toss up about whether or not I'm going to do Carol Ann, "I can't see you, Mommy," or if I'm going to do Phil Collins "In the Air Tonight." "Well, I remember." You know, but I can't help it. I'm going to do one or the other. So you have those moments in those films, and there's lots of those. And, you know, there's always specials that do the countdowns of the greatest horror movie moments. But I'm asking, what movies unnerved you? What movie moments unnerved you? What was too much for you to handle? What stuck with you after you were done watching the film? And I said I would mention the one horror film that has unnerved me in recent years. And as, again, generally, I find them all to be disappointing. And the ending usually ruins whatever tension was built up ahead of that. But there was a movie that came out a few years ago called Skinamarink. And many people that have watched this movie, it's a love-hate kind of movie. People either love it or they hate it. And I'm in the camp that loves it. I thought it was innovative. I thought it was great. This was my childhood nightmares put on the screen. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like the dreams that I had when I was a kid and still occasionally have to this day. The basic premise of the film is two children, I think one's 5 and one is 3. They wake up and their parents are gone. And there's no doors or windows in their house. And there's something in the house that's trying to get them. But it's not like it's chasing them around the house. It's slow. And it's tense. And it's shot from their perspective, even though you never really see their faces. But the camera is low to the ground. And the angles, you feel like you are a 5-year-old kid alone in the dark in a house. And it just, it unsettled me so much as I was watching it that I watch horror movies in the dark, no lights on. And I actually contemplated getting up and just turning the lights on. It's not that I was scared, but I was unnerved. And the way that that movie made me feel while I was watching it, the tension that I felt, is something that I hadn't felt watching a horror movie in forever. And I loved every minute of it. Other people watch it and they say, "I hated that movie. I didn't get it. I couldn't follow along." There kind of is no plot. And if you're epileptic, don't watch it because there's a lot of flashing lights that could induce seizures. But it was one of the most innovative films I've seen in a long time, and I felt like it actually delivered. So again, it's called Skinamarink. And you can stream it on, I believe it's on Hulu and Shudder. And they also sell DVDs of it at Walmart. Blu-rays. And every time I go into Walmart, I'm like, I want to buy this. But there's got to be a 4K edition. And I'd rather have that one. Because now that I've got the Atmos sound system, I got to put that movie in and see if it makes me feel even more unnerved. Even though now I know it's going to happen, I got a feeling it'll still creep me out. That might be a lights on kind of moment. Probably not, though. Love watching horror films in the dark. I don't like going to the movies to see horror films, though, because there's too many people yelling and like hooting and hollering and cheering and all that. And like it kind of takes you out of the moment. Unless it's a fun, you know, if it's Terrifier, where you're not there to be scared, you're there to kind of cheer on the how sick and demented it can get. That's a different story. Anyway, 508-996-0500. Let's take a phone call here. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
What's shaking, Playboy?
What's going on?
You're the Freddie Fender of the South Coast. And so those who know Freddie Fender is from the 70s. There you go. Well, you used to be when you were a little chunkier.
I was going
to
say, what makes me Freddie Fender?
Well, that is when the last teardrop falls. He even sounded like him right there. He used to live here in Vegas. I remember seeing him. He just about died like 2020, 2019, something like that. I used to see him downtown at the El Cortez. So if you like to gamble down there. Yeah, Freddie Fender was pretty neat people. Still had most of his hair, you know, like is your hair still frosted blonde like that, like got the Nature Boy on you?
No, my hair was never frosted blonde. No,
I saw that one picture. I said, dang, that's the one picture you had up on. You put so many pictures on your Facebook thing. You had was like blonde, and you were like all skinny. I was like, what the heck is that? You look like you were malnourished. I'm getting kind of concerned about my fella.
I used to be blonde, you know? As a kid, yeah. Not anymore, though.
But I'm that top, like you had it, like you, like, was right there. That top part was all blonde, you know, and like, you know, like Ric Flair's color blonde. Remember when Ric Flair cut the back of his hair? Remember when he cut, that's how your hair looked on that picture. And you were so skinny, though, too. Did you do something? Was that... how long ago was that blonde picture, though, you had? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know which one you're talking about, but my hair started to get darker, like, when I was in college.
Okay, so that was when you were clean-shaven, right?
I think I grew my beard in college. I had a goatee in high school for a little while, but I grew my beard in college and pretty much had it ever since.
I remember this Mexican guy, he had a goatee in the fourth grade. And that's, you know...
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but he's in fourth grade, and he graduated with us and stuff. And his sister had one when she was in sixth. You know, so that gives you something to think about the facial hair. You know, like that one chick, she's supposed to be like one of the most beautiful women in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s. And she, dozens of men committed suicide. She turned them down because they wanted her to marry him. Remember, she was kind of, do you know what that picture is? She's got thick eyebrows. I like thick eyebrows in women, but she looks really, really round and manly, like, you know. But like, oh, well, you know, it could be worse. At least, you know, at least I don't have to sleep with her, you know. But again, you know.
This is the stream of consciousness that is Limone.
Thank you, children. Children of the corn. So you were talking about the favorite shows or horror films. For me, I'm still like kind of old school. I enjoy The Night Stalker, Carl Kolchick, The Night Stalker. Mm-hmm. All of those. Mostly all of them. There's some of them that rather suck, you know, but especially the ones that I know about, the ones that are true stories, like the one started the original movie about the Vegas vampire, the true story here. That's why I want you to come out here. I want to show you where the But they did that at, you know how, like, the Desert Posse, which is Metropolitan Police Department, he beat down 12 of them. Skorzinski, the doctor, that he was shot with at point blank range with shotguns, and he beat him down and escaped. That I can show you where the house is at, where he was at, in the pool and stuff back there. It's the Binion, you know, Benny Binion's. It's one of his houses. You know, remember his son was killed back in the 90s by his girlfriend and her boyfriend. Do you remember about that? The Binion story about...
I'm not familiar.
Oh, you live such a sheltered life out there. So we got to get you out of there. I don't know. Got to get you to come visit. There's something else I'm going to tell you, but I totally forgot what it is.
Well, I got about 30 seconds for you because I got another caller that I want to get in.
Okay, other caller. Hope they have a good conversation for everyone up there. And I think I'll probably call you. I don't know. I'm thinking about coming out there to make a visit real soon, between now and Thanksgiving.
Well, we'll be here.
Okay, well, yeah, you got to be telling you, like, we're doing this spooky thing. You're going to be gone. I have to wait to see you outside, sitting outside your apartment, waiting for you to come back and stuff like that, you know. Oh, remember I told you how I have something that Ronnie James Dio gave me. I have it out in storage. I didn't bring it in the house because I didn't want to bring anything that might have something bad with him. Now, he was real nice to me. I'm not saying that he would have personally given me something that would have purposely.
Right, not intentionally, but it can happen, right.
Yeah, but I left them. It's out in the garage, in my storage out there. So maybe I'll go out there and take pictures of it and show everybody what it is. You know, and it's like, but it's been so long, geez. Yeah, but okay, I want to say thank you. How's Miss Kitty doing? Has she been called in lately?
She called in yesterday. Yeah, she's doing okay. We'll see her tomorrow at the Stevie's Wine and Spirits tasting. She's going to come to that.
Well, tell her to get a drink from me and tell Stevie I know he's got a vision. Stevie, right? Well, that's a story I can tell you another time.
All right, another time. I got to hold you there. You have a great day.
God bless everybody in the New Bedford area, and may the good Lord smile upon you.
All right. That is Lamone in Las Vegas. Thank you, Lamone. Let's go to this call here, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I watched The Exorcist premiere in Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh. What was the audience reaction?
Everybody in the theater was screaming. I laughed through the whole thing. I thought it was hilarious.
Why'd you think it was funny? Was it cheesy to you?
Everything they did was just crazy, just funny. I just thought it was a comedy from the beginning.
Really? Yeah. Well, I mean, I showed it to my son, and my son thought the same thing. He was like, "Yeah, that's not a scary movie at all." Like that, he thought it was funny, more funny than anything because of the special effects. He thought the special effects were very cheesy. I said, "Hey, in the 70s, people thought that was, you know, cutting edge."
Yes, I know. But I did think it was funny. So great. Have a great day, everybody.
All right, take it easy. All right, yeah, The Exorcist is one of those films that is very polarizing. People love it or they hate it. I think people that look at it now through the lens of modern horror, it definitely looks very, I won't say cheesy, but it looks, you know, kind of obvious what's special effects. But I honestly think it has held up well, especially if you go back and you watch it now in, you know, high definition and the special editions that have come out, and you see some of the restored footage and all that. And I still think it holds up very, very well. And I still think it is a movie that unnerves people. But really, the dividing line for whether or not it freaks you out is if you're a parent and you have kids, it really freaks you out because that movie just becomes an allegory for anything that can happen to your children that you don't even think about. You know, the evil that could be around that you try to keep them safe in every way possible, but then there's still an evil that can sneak in because there is one thing you didn't consider. And I think that's what kind of stuck with a lot of people about that film. Let's see. DSY says, I don't think any horror films have left me unnerved, but a few of the Twilight Zone episodes have. And that's certainly something that, you know, I look at the Twilight Zone more as the social commentary that it was. So the horror side of it or the scary part of it never really sunk in with me. It was more about the statement that the episodes were making. But then again, I also watched it, you know, in the 80s and 90s when people were already talking about the social commentary. That wasn't something that was really discussed in its day. That was something that kind of came later in all the repeated viewings of it in syndication. But even in people that were watching in the 60s, they knew the Twilight Zone was different than, say, The Outer Limits or One Step Beyond or some of those other shows that were on that were more kind of focused on the scares than they were the message. And you can find One Step Beyond streaming on some of the free apps. I can't remember which one it was, but I was watching on one of the free apps through the cable box. You can still watch The Outer Limits. I think that might be on Hulu. I know it's on one of the streaming services, maybe Max. I know it's on one of those streaming services. And some of these other shows you can still find. There's other ones that came out that weren't as popular and successful and don't get syndicated as much. But now that they're getting put on YouTube and other streaming services, you can check those out. And of course, all the different iterations of the Twilight Zone over the years. You know, in the 80s, they came out with Twilight Zone, the movie, and that led to the revamped 80s version of the Twilight Zone, which had some pretty interesting episodes. And then there was another one in the 90s and then the 2000s. It seems like every generation, they come out with a reboot of the Twilight Zone, and it's never going to match the original because it doesn't have the Rod Serling hand. And Jordan Peele was probably the closest person that was going to be able to recreate that, and that didn't even work out. So I see where, you know, it's a hard thing to replicate. And I've been trying for years to get Ann Serling, Rod Serling's daughter, to come on Spooky South Coast, and hopefully we do. I want to have her, and I want to have William Castle's daughter come on. It can be one episode, it can be two different episodes, but I want to have them both because they're both keeping the legacy of their fathers alive. And Serling, of course, went on to create the Night Gallery afterward. And the Night Gallery, if you haven't seen that, that's streaming. They also sell a DVD set at Walmart for, like, I think, like $25 or $35. And that was more horror than it was social commentary. In the 70s, you got more of a focus on the scary, like Kolchak, like the Hammer House of Horror. And so you've got things that are a little bit more about kind of freaking you out and giving you those scary moments because horror was so popular in the 70s and the game had been changed. You had to bring scares to the table. Mild horror didn't cut it to those 70s audiences. Melissa in a question says, "Hey Tim, my favorite horror film is George A. Romero's Day of the Dead. Have a spooky day." Well, I hope you do as well, Melissa. And the George Romero films are great. I was lucky enough at Terracon to be close in proximity. My table was close to the cast of Night of the Living Dead and the co-creator of Night of the Living Dead. And they're just a wonderful group of people. Just awesome, awesome folks. So they're all, you know, up there in age now. But they loved hearing about the influence that movie had. And think about it. That is what gave birth to the whole zombie genre, really. But in addition to that, you know, these other movies, Day of the Dead, Return of the Living Dead, all of these movies kind of continued on with that zombie trope in a way that's taken it to different directions. Because Night of the Living Dead was just really an updated version of some of the horror we'd seen in the 30s and 40s, but with a more modern take. And we've seen zombies change in the way that they're portrayed. In fact, one of my favorite portrayals of zombies, there was an author named Isaac Marion who wrote a book called Warm Bodies. And he was just an author pushing, I think this was his first novel, and he's just out there pushing it, and he wanted to come on Spooky South Coast, and we had him on, and he was a great guest. Chris Balzano actually hosted that episode, and it was a great conversation. And I read the book, and I was like, this is a really good book and a really unique twist on zombies where it was written from the zombies' perspective. Two zombies fall in love, and the humans are trying to wipe out the zombies, and they're trying to find a way to continue on. And they made a film of it, and the film was great as well. So, you know, you can get all these different kind of twists to the zombie story. So it's more than just brainless, zombies walking around looking for brains to eat. And if you remember, there was the movie that was about the real life zombies, Serpent and the Rainbow. I had the chance to interview the man who wrote the book that was based on. And he actually went to Haiti and did the research into these zombies and said, you know, this is a real phenomenon. It's not that the dead is coming back to life, but it's that these people are completely controlled. So it's fascinating stuff. 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break. We'll be right back. From the mountains of fame to the river so deep, I must be looking for something. Something sacred I lost, but the river is wide, and it's too hard to cross. Even though I know the river is wide, I walk down every evening and stand on the shore. I try to cross to the opposite side so I can finally find what I've been looking for in the middle of the night. I go walking. And welcome back in. 508-996-0500. App chat, open line voicemails on the WBSM app. We're talking about a lot of things this morning. We were talking a little bit about the Kamala Harris town hall last night on CNN. And by the way, that was supposed to be a debate. CNN set the time aside for a debate between Harris and Trump. Trump declined to take part. And so then they said, well, we'll give you each a town hall. We'll run them back to back. And Harris accepted and Trump declined. So that's what you got last night, was just a Kamala Harris town hall. And as I was saying before, I think, you know, she didn't answer some questions. I think she gave kind of canned answers to others. And in some, she opened up and showed a little bit more of a candid side. But you've got to do more of that. I know that they've announced already that her final campaign appearance will be, and I don't think that this is the truth, but I think there'll be more things that come along, but that she's doing next Tuesday. She's going to be on the Ellipse at the site where Donald Trump held his event on January 6th, 2021. So where he said, you know, we're going to march down to the Capitol and I'll be right there with you. That particular spot, that's where she's going to hold her final campaign stop to contrast the difference in her approach and what she's looking to do versus Donald Trump. So I think the optics of that make a statement. And if that's the lasting message that undecided voters, if there are any of those out there, and I know people were saying in the town hall last night that they were undecided voters, I just don't believe that. Especially the way some of them were questioning her. It sounded to me like they'd already made up their minds. So I just think that some of that is overplayed, because otherwise, if we knew that it was decided and that people had made their decision, people wouldn't be tuning in to watch this coverage. Or they'd say, all right, enough already. It's kind of like when you're listening to someone talk about a sports game where you know that a team is going to blow out the other team. How much do you really want to hear the pregame and the postgame? Like, all right, we get it. They're going to win this one handily. And all right, we get it. They won handily. Like, how much do you really need? And that's kind of like what we're at for a lot of people in this country right now, is they don't need the pregame hype up anymore. They're ready for the game to start. And there's, you know, already people that are up in arms because certain states have announced, you know, we're not going to have the results on election night. It's going to take us a little while. Oh, look at that. It's proof that it's all rigged. That they already know that they're not going to get it done. No, what they already know is that they're already getting record numbers of early voting, which all has to be put in by hand by the election workers on election day. They can't put it in ahead of time. So that's all got to be fed into the machines. And then you've also got people who are going to turn out at the last minute that weren't planning on voting. So I think you're going to have bigger numbers than you've had in recent years. And so it's going to take a while to get everything all together. And do I think we'll have to wait as long as we did in 2020? Maybe not, because we've learned how to handle this better. But I think, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect it's going to take a day or two to have the final results. 508-996-0500, if you want to call in and chime in. We were getting some app chat messages that I would love to show you, but right now I've got to just re-sign in on my computer, so bear with me for a moment. Every once in a while, the app site signs me out, and I have to re-sign in with all my right credentials, which are saved, so it just clicks, but it still takes a few minutes. Especially when it moves so slowly. But we were talking also about horror films. And I was asking, all right, I'm just going to start a new tab. I was asking, you know, what were the horror films that unnerved you? And I mentioned the one that got me in recent years was the film Skinamarink. And if you haven't seen it, it's well worth your time. I know not everybody loves it, but in my opinion, I think it's one of the most innovative horror films I've seen in a long time. But there's also been a number of other ones that have come out that have been decent. They always just disappoint me in the end. We have KT in New Bedford who says, one of my favorites as a kid was The Gate. It was like the Goonies of horror movies for me. And I love The Gate because it was like a horror movie for kids where it was spooky and scary enough, but also like your parents would let you watch it. Now, my parents let me watch any film, but they were not very restrictive when it came to what we could watch. It was, you know, the adult scenes, you know, the X-rated scenes kind of thing, that those we wouldn't be allowed to watch, but they'd let us watch a movie that had it. They would just skip through that part. But they were not very restrictive in the films that we watched. So, you know, I loved being an 8-year-old kid watching Beverly Hills Cop and then reciting all the lines at school and getting in trouble. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Oh, that's funny. Tim, I got a question for you. Oh, just your opinion. You know, Trump goes around saying that the election was stolen and they cheated and everything. But I'll never understand how in certain states where on the same ticket, Republican people won. So how could they win and Trump lose, but it's fraudulent? That don't even make sense to me.
It all depends on what of the conspiracy theories you choose to focus in on. So if you focus in on the Dominion voting machines were changing the votes from Trump to Biden, that's, you know, then you can make excuses for that and utilize that to say, well, that explains why, you know, that there were Republican candidates that won. They were only messing with Trump versus Biden. But then if you're talking about people bringing in ballots, then, well, why would those ballots be for Republican candidates? Well, that's because they were just trying to make it look like it wasn't rigged. So they're willing to let some Republicans win down ticket to keep Donald Trump out of the White House. They'll come up with a conspiracy theory excuse for every question that you can have for it.
But if they were hand counted one at a time, some places were counted up to three times. How could that be? That has nothing to do with machines.
Well, that depends on what you want to think of how those ballots came in. Were they all hand counted by people? Were the ballots that were hand counted all cast by people who came in and cast the ballot, or were some of them brought in those suitcases? You know, like they've got all these different conspiracy theories to try. And that's the thing, is when you start to chip away at all of the things that they say and prove to them that it's incorrect, they'll just come out with another what about. And so it's a fruitless argument to try to make at this point. If people want to be stupid enough to believe that the election was rigged, I'm just going to let them be stupid. You know, it's the same reason there's people out there that think that Miracle Whip is better than mayonnaise. And as long as they're going to keep thinking that, I know I'm not going to change their minds. They're very, very, very wrong, but I'm not going to fight with them anymore about it. Just enjoy your Miracle Whip.
Right. One more thing, Tim. Secondly, you know how the whole cabinet and national security cabinet up to, like, I think it's like 15, you know, like Miley Kelly, Pence, all these different people, right, that all have come out and said that he's unfit to take office and they're really worried about it. How does people on the right that support Trump look at all these people and think that they're just making it up, or they're just mad at him, or
well, because they just make excuses for it. We already got that app chat message earlier where somebody said, "Yeah, all those people that are speaking out against Trump, they're all just they all just have a grudge because they were all fired." Well, they weren't all fired. John, right. You know, like you can look at, and in some cases, you know, did Trump let them go or did he fire them before because they were ready to resign on their own? But look at somebody like Mattis. Mattis resigned. He walked away because he didn't want to be dealing with Trump anymore. Look at somebody like Bill Barr. He couldn't take, the election denying anymore. And so he just said, I'm done. And so I think you've got more people who walked away and they don't care if he wants to portray it as, I fired that guy. Like, how many times have you had a conversation with somebody where did you get fired or did you resign? Well, they let me quit before they could fire me, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that you got some of that went on with a lot of these people. The bottom line is, I don't care how they didn't work anymore. You can't have all these people that are people of integrity, people who were generals in the military, and say that they all hold a personal grudge against the guy. So they're all saying all this because they hold a grudge. Maybe one, maybe two, but I can't believe 5, 6, 7, 10 people are all saying this stuff just because they have a grudge. And look at all the people that left the Trump administration. Nobody that left is saying that, you know, that this is a guy that should get reelected. They're all saying this is insane, the fact that people are even considering voting for him a second time. So, all right. Well, thank you for the call. Oh, I don't know what happened there. I think he dropped off. All right. Let's take another call here. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. One of the movies, like going back to the horror movies, one of the movies that really stuck in my head as a kid is, I don't even know if I have the name correct or not, was Humanoids from the Deep. Do you ever remember anything like that?
I do not.
No? Oh, man, that was one that just really freaked me out as a kid. I don't know. I might have the name wrong, but that's you were thinking about it.
No, I just looked it up. So it's a movie that came out in 1980.
Okay. Yeah, man. I just remember a beach scene where one of the guys went out to swim, came back, and he's standing there with his back towards all his buddies, and then he turns around and half his face was gone. I was like, it just messed me all up.
Stars Vic Morrow, who got killed making the Twilight Zone movie. He was the guy that was killed in the helicopter crash. And then also stars Doug McClure, who was later on that show Out of This World that I was talking about earlier. So you found a way, inadvertently, to tie all the threads together of what we've been talking about this morning. You gave me two callbacks right there.
all right, Tim. Have a good day.
You as well. Take care. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
All right, Tim. Just one question that if you can answer it. If Trump was so great, why did he get voted out the first time?
Well, that's a problem. Is so many people that are in support of him don't believe that he got voted out.
Oh.
Because he laid the groundwork before the election was even, over. That if he lost, it was going to be because it was rigged. So they were already ready to believe the con man right at that moment, let alone, whenever they started putting out this false information and this false, quote unquote, evidence.
Yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't rigged. I mean,
right. I know it because I'm a rational thinking person, but unfortunately there's a lot of people in this country that aren't.
All right. I just wanted to ask you that.
All right.
Thank you.
You have a good day. I got to take a break, but we can take some more calls, 508-996-0500. Before I take that break, though, I've been talking about how busy I am this time of year and running around and doing all kinds of stuff. And, even when I get some downtime, I'd rather be sitting down watching a horror movie than actually doing something like laundry, right? Well, that's why Dash Laundromat is so cool, because Dash has got my back. They have lockers outside of Dash Laundromat, which is located at One State Road in Dartmouth, where I can drop off my laundry in the locker. I just go on the app. I tell them I'm dropping it off on the locker. I select what locker I want to open. They open it up. I put my laundry in. I go off and do what I got to do. Then they will do my laundry for me. They'll wash it. They'll dry it. They'll fold it. They can use whatever kind of add-ons you want to use. If you want to have some of the stuff that makes it smell nice, some fabric softener, whatever it may be, if you want to upgrade from the regular detergent that they use, you can do all of that. And then when it's all done, they'll wash it, they'll dry it, they'll fold it, they'll put it back in the bag or the basket, whatever it is that you're going to bring it in, and they'll put it in the locker for you to pick up when it works for you. Or if you can't even get over there to leave it in the locker, they'll come to your home, they'll come to your work, they'll pick up your laundry, wash, dry, fold, bring it back to you. It's really that simple. And if you go there and you do your laundry, you want to drop it off, they'll do that for you. They'll let you leave it there in person. They'll wash, dry, fold it, and give it back to you. Or you can actually wash it there yourself. And brand new state-of-the-art machines that are quiet, not a distraction. So if you want to hang out in the back and watch a movie or do some work, have the kids watch Disney Plus. All the TVs at Dash have Disney Plus for the kids. So many great options. It's about making the laundry work for you instead of you having to do the work of doing the laundry. So check out Dash Laundromat, 1 State Road in Dartmouth, and be sure to download the app, the Dash Laundromat app, in the App Store so you can see all those great options. And also, make sure you follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Dash Laundromat, 1 State Road in Dartmouth. Doing tomorrow from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. I hope you're joining me at Stevie's Wine and Spirits, 115 Huddleston Avenue in Fairhaven, for their big spooky tasting. I'm going to be there the whole time. We're going to be broadcasting from there. We're going to be doing some call-ins during the Howie Carr Show. I'll probably be telling some ghost stories. When I get a few of these samples in me, I definitely will be talking about ghosts for sure. But they're going to have some great drinks for you to sample, some great fall flavors like one of my favorites, Demon Seed Whiskey, as well as a number of other things like Harridan Vodka, which has the Paranormal Reserve. But they're also going to be mixing up 2 spooky cocktails for you to try as well. It looks like one of them involves pumpkin pie liqueur and Demon Seed Scorpion Pepper Whiskey. I am down for that, absolutely. So again, 4 to 6 tomorrow at Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Come on by for the tasting. They're going to have a variety of things for you to try. And, of course, you'll get 10% off the items that they're featuring at the tasting. And also, the other great thing about Stevie's is the purple dot. You can try before you buy anything in the store that has a purple dot. So come on by and hang out with me tomorrow, 4 to 6, at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. And make sure you follow them on Facebook and Instagram so you know about all of their great pop-up tasting events. One more break I got to take before the end of the show. We'll be right back. All right. We are out of time for today, but stay tuned for Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now coming your way, and he'll take more of your calls. I'll be back tomorrow. And, of course, don't forget, you can come by and hang out with me at Stevie's on Friday. We'll have some.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.